Hey everybody, welcome to the Wait What If podcast. I hope you're doing fine. Stop it. You can't joke like that anymore. Can't do voices because it's people are sensitive. If it's just a funny voice, you should be able to do it, despite whether it's associated with, you know, a group of people. Like if you do in a, and you know what? I'm not even going to tread, you know, I'm treading a fine line right now, which is a little weird, right? I'm talking on the radio or whatever you want to call this, your iPod. And I'm treading a fine line because I'm talking about making fun of people. And as adults, we're not allowed to do that, which is freaking bizarre. It's weird. And I kind of lost my train of thought there. Oh, I started off with making a funny voice, but I can't because people are sensitive. But we should be able to do that. And if you're offended by it, I apologize. Make fun of me. I don't give a shit. Make fun of the way I talk. I got kind of like a... Someone told me I sounded like David Foley, which I guess, if you don't know who that is, the guy from The Kids in the Hall, I guess it's a compliment. I don't know. But at least I don't look like David Foley. I was told I looked like, probably not anymore because I have a big beard, but I was told at one time I looked like, not Stifler, who is the guy on American Pie, the one who was trying to have sex with Stifler's mom. I can't remember his name, but I was told I looked like him, and that was kind of an insult, I guess. What the hell am I talking about? This is episode 61. And I invited Gray Winsler on. He has his own YouTube channel. I'll put a link in the show notes. Just go in there and click the link and magically you'll be taken to his YouTube channel and check out everything he has to say. What else? If you're listening and you have your own podcast and you're like, how can I make money on this venture? First off, if you're just starting your own podcast, you really shouldn't be thinking about that because you're not going to make any money. But if by any chance your audience has grown to a significant number and you think that you can drive them towards a particular product, then go to my website and waitwhatif.com/market. It takes you to a website called Share a Sale. I drive you through my website, so I get some credit for it. So this is kind of like a sneaky little commercial I'm doing here. But if you go to Share Site and you can go in and set up an account and it doesn't cost you anything, and then you can go through like let's say you have a bicycle podcast and all you talk about is bicycles. You can go on there and look for companies that sell bicycles or bicycle equipment or anything like that. And you link up with them and they give you like a specific website or technology. They give you a link that you use specifically for you, and then you drive your traffic through that link and boom, you get credit for it. And each one has different terms. Like if you sell so much of their products, they give you 10% or whatever. Or if people set up an account or just check it out. Go to waitwhatif.com/market and you'll see that. So that's all I have to say. Let's check out this podcast. He's a cool guy. It's a really good show. And I enjoyed recording it. And that's about all. Thanks.
You're listening to the Wait What If podcast.
We have Gray Winsler on. Gray is a YouTuber. What do you call you guys? YouTuber, video maker, what?
YouTuber. It's a new term for me. I'm new to it.
But yeah.
I'm happy to be called a YouTuber.
Are you a student? Are you do you work, or how do you get the time to do it?
I have a weird relationship with school. I dropped out of eighth grade. My parents printed off high school diploma. I started college like 2 years later.
Seriously?
Yeah, seriously.
That's pretty awesome, actually. Man, do you talk about that openly or?
Yeah, I actually, I talked about that on the last podcast I did. They were like, what's your background? I was like, oh, I was homeschooled basically. And then I dropped out of junior high. And if you want the whole story, I can be a bit more detailed.
Yeah, let's do it. Let's do it. I'm going to put it at the beginning because I didn't know. Man, see, this is good stuff. Wish I had known this. All right. So back up. How did you, so tell me about your schooling. I guess, because I don't even know where to ask.
Right. So I was homeschooled for the most of my childhood. My parents just didn't trust public school. Then I went to school full-time for junior high for 2 years, for sixth and seventh grade. I did 2 weeks of eighth grade, and then I told my parents, I don't like my teachers. And they said, okay, stop going. And I said, okay, and I stopped going.
Were they like hardline libertarians? Or were they hippies? What was their deal?
No, it was specifically the issue of school, that they just didn't trust the system or teachers. My dad's a neocon, would support people like Rick Santorum, I think.
Yeah. Okay.
Mostly stays out of politics. So it was specifically this issue. And so they're like, well, whatever, just drop out. We'll homeschool you for high school. Basically, I took a year off for eighth grade, mostly.
Man, I would have loved that when I was in eighth grade.
Yeah, I wish I had done something. You know, I look back and I know I was young, but I just like, oh man, if I had started doing YouTube then, I would be massive. so I did that. They ended up ordering me books for freshman year. And my parents were always hands off with my schooling. They would basically, they had to work. So they just kind of left me the to-do list for the day and I did it. And with high school specifically, they literally just gave me the books and were like, this is your school for the year. So I just took the tests, didn't read anything. And then my dad was like, well, we'll just go take the entrance exam at college, at the community college. And I was like, okay, I took that. I got in. They needed a high school transcript. My parents printed it off of the internet, signed it, handed it to my community college, who didn't seem to care. And then I started college. And
that's crazy.
I was 15 at the time, so my parents had to drive me to my first day of college, which was fun.
Now, like, did you? Because you're obviously intelligent. You know what you're talking about and stuff. You're not. You don't sound like a eighth grade dropout. But. Right. But do like someone like myself, I had to go through school. Otherwise, I never would have learned any sort of math, any sort of algebra, or anything. Do you have those skills, or is that stuff you're like, you know what? I'm not gonna be an engineer, so I don't really have to know that. Like, did you cover everything, or how did that work out for you?
To an extent. So one of the things that helped me when I was homeschooled. For elementary school, again, it was the same kind of thing where I was just kind of left to my own devices for the large part. And that's carried into today where I am now, where I learn on my own and I figure out what I want to know. And then I just, you know, find a book on it or a podcast or video or whatever. So I guess from the time I was a child, I've kind of been self-educated. And as far as like, gaps. I'm not as strong at math as I would like to be. I took calculus. I passed calculus. That was a miracle. But that's something, there's so many resources now on the internet, like Khan Academy.
Yeah.
That's something that it's always in the back of my mind. And a lot of the things I care about, math is important, you know. I enjoy doing physics. Physics 161, you know, just like the first course was one of my favorite classes, and that's based in calculus, and I wish I had a better understanding of it. So there are some gaps, I would say. For the most part, I don't think I missed out on anything. I don't feel like I needed to go to prom. No one has really sold me on that yet. I don't know. Did that answer your question? Maybe?
Yeah, man. I, as a libertarian, I want to like do a case study on you. Print like the I don't know, the interesting case of Gray Winsler.
Yeah, I'm an anomaly in too many ways. I think I'd be an outlier. I got the red hair and the left-handedness and in and out of school. So lived in like 5 different states. I'm too weird, I think, to be a good for your sample, but maybe.
Well, that's a pretty cool story, man. I'm glad you shared that with me. So you have your own YouTube channel. Do you have I have a YouTube channel, but I don't really use it. It's just kind of like a placeholder, and I send my shows over there, but I haven't really done anything with it yet. Do you have like a direct link to it? Cause mine, there's no direct link. I mean, there is if I emailed it to you or something, but it's just a bunch of, you know, numbers and letters and all that.
Oh, right. It's funny. When I got to like 1,000 subscribers, they were like, hey, you can have youtube.com/Gray Winslow.
Oh, cool.
I did that, but then it didn't work. So I used the long number chain.
Okay.
People just click it anyway.
All right. So if the listeners want to find you, how can they find you?
If you search my name, Gray Winslow, WINSLER, or easier than that, if you just search Gray and Trump together on YouTube.
And then you pop up.
So,
and that was like your big thing, right? Once you, you hit the nail on the head. That was what everyone was talking about at that time. And, yeah. and you had a great video, a great thing to say there. So I guess people liked it.
Just to give people, like a little bit of context. The first video I uploaded was, why Donald Trump is going to be our next president.
Okay.
And initially that, it didn't get too much traction. Scott Adams, I don't know if you know him. He does the Dilbert comic strip. Mm-hmm. He tweeted it out to his followers because he's been blogging about Trump since before I started videoing about Trump.
Okay.
But anyway, and then as the election went on and Trump continued to succeed, I guess.
Yeah.
it kept getting more traction. And the funny thing, I know we're going to be talking about free speech later, mm-hmm. and the video I think you found me through is the political correctness one.
Yeah, I think so.
Which I uploaded in January, mm-hmm. and it did absolutely nothing until around November, mm-hmm. after the election, and then it just exploded basically overnight. It got like 300,000 views over a weekend after being silent for a year.
Nice.
But yeah, that's my YouTube.
Okay. Yeah, that's the weird thing about this. I don't know what we're doing. This modern way of connecting. Like, you and I would not have a voice, most likely, even 20 years ago. I was going to say 50 years ago, but maybe 15 years ago. Yeah. You know, you might have a cable TV show. I don't know. How old are you? Do you remember any of those?
I'm very young. I've been told about all of these things.
Okay.
Newspapers used to exist.
Yeah, it was like old school. You had cable, and that was it. You couldn't choose what you watched or anything.
Right.
It was basically on, and then there was always like these channels at your local like cable. They weren't even. I guess it was the cable company, but I don't quite understand how it works. But almost be like a relay station. And you could go and like, I don't know, I guess buy time, and it wouldn't be expensive. And it was like, it just had that VHS recording, and yeah. You'd go on there at night and random people would have shows on there. And I guess that kind of was the start of it.
Oh, I didn't even realize that happened.
Yeah.
I would say to go into what you're saying about like this new tech we have that has kind of removed gatekeepers. There are downsides to it. Like, you know, you go to Facebook and there's all this fake news propagating because anyone can just say whatever they want.
Yeah.
But I think ultimately it's been beneficial, obviously, like to people like me. But there are tons of people who achieved great success after posting, you know, a YouTube video. I don't know if you know Bo Burnham, the comedian, but that was how his start, just making like a goofy YouTube video as a kid at his parents' house. And now he has 3 comedy specials that have all done amazing.
Yeah. And that, the other thing too, is the conversation opens up between yourself and like, let's say for me, I guess, in my medium, which they're very close, you know, I guess an airway or, I don't even know how to combine the two, but an entertainment outlet that YouTube offered for people in the AV world and there's really no YouTube for podcasting, but I guess iTunes offered for the, I guess the people that just like to talk. But if I had done this 20 years ago, it would be on like a local AM station, and then it would be, you know, really good luck to whoever. I mean, you would never gain an audience. It would just have to be local. I feel with podcasting anyways, unless you're producing like an NPR sounding show, which I have a friend who actually lives a few doors down. He has a show called Make It a Double, and he owns a whiskey bar, and his whole show is based on talking to people about alcohol. So he goes out there for a single show. He might interview a few people and then put in some, I mean, he really puts a lot of time in editing it together. But for the most part, it's just you hit record. If there's some just horrible part you want to take out, you can take it out. But the beauty of podcasting is it's this sort of raw, live. You treat it as kind of a live thing. So if you screw up, you just kind of let it go. And I think people pick up on that. I mean, that's kind of what you want to hear in this medium. However, you look at YouTube, if you were just rambling without good sound, without good lighting, without good editing, no one would listen or no one would watch that.
Yeah, people. I had pretty terrible audio in my first couple of videos. People thankfully bared through it. You're right. Like it's a visual medium, and there's all these other components to it. And I feel like I think that like the nice thing about podcasts that you'd mentioned is that you can listen to them like passively. Like you can go for a run and have a podcast in your ear, which you can't really do with YouTube.
Right.
So I think that the videos need to be more stimulating. So like I just did my first interview the other day, and I'm cutting it together, and I basically like compressed the interview in half, and you know, doing cuts and adding things on top of what he's talking about, because when we're talking right now and you're walking down the street, it's engaging, but when you're just staring at someone like talk at a camera for, you know, 10 minutes, it gets a little old.
Yeah. Do you pre-write all your stuff? Is it pre-scripted and you run a couple takes, or how do you do it?
So for the most part, I just started doing a new kind of video where I just kind of respond to people's comments. And that has been off the cuff, and then I'll just in the edit cut out any parts I don't like. But for the most part, my videos are scripted, and yeah, I'll memorize what I'm going to say. I'll do a few takes. Normally what ends up happening is there'll be a few ad-libs in there. That helps make it sound more natural, and then I'm not just reading from a script. But they are scripted.
Okay. I try to do, like, for my advertisers and stuff, I try to go off the cuff, and I do, I mean, for the most part, just like I do my show. Sure. But when I know that I'm trying to get out a certain message, it's horrible. I must do 10 takes, and I'm like, God damn, none of these sound good.
For me, part of it is, because I'm talking about politics for the most part and things, like it's really important to me. I try to be objective, and everyone has a bias and an agenda. Like a lot of times I'll have paragraphs that kind of alternate in terms of which side they're supporting. And the concern is when I'm just going off the cuff, it's obviously way more of my own ideas and thoughts that come out, and I lose some of that objectivity I feel like it when it's heavily scripted and researched. So that's part of the impetus for that.
That's so when you first set out to start your show, were you planning to be political or social commentary, or what was your idea?
I had absolutely no plans. I had always played around with YouTube, like as a kid. There's still very embarrassing old videos of me on YouTube.
Nice. You got to put them up, man. That's the best stuff.
maybe. We'll see. Lately, I'll have that when I launch a Patreon. That'll be one of the rewards.
There you go. But,
when I made this video, it was really just that I had been reading a lot about Trump, and I had just kind of become fascinated, and I just felt like I needed to get something out there. And then I was watching these people like Nerdwriter and Vsauce, and I was just like, what they were doing was so cool, and I just wanted to do something kind of like that. Mm-hmm. So I was like, well, I'll just make a video about Trump and try and take some of their style.
Right.
And there was never an intent of like, this is going to be a political you know, talk show and I'm going to, you know, predict things and objective analysis. There was no plans. Even now I'm still, you know, figuring out my vision for the future. So.
Oh yeah. I mean, I've been doing it for 3 years and I'm still trying to figure out where the show's going. How am I going to, I'm like, oh, you know, I spent 6 months not doing any interviews and I was like, man, I missed doing interviews. So I just started doing interviews again.
Yeah, it was cool. I listened to the, you had a guy who did a TED talk last week, I believe. I can't remember his name.
Yeah. Dr. Christopher Ryan.
Interview. And that's kind of part of what's motivating me now to like wanting to grow my audience is that I want to be able to attract people like him to have interesting conversations about politics or philosophy or history or any of these kind of things. I mean, a lot of my heroes, I don't know if you listen to like the Tim Ferriss show. Well, all he does is, you know, interview amazingly talented people and get to tease out, you know, all the things that make them great.
Sure. It's hard in a way. Let me think how I can put it. So, you know, yeah, what I do is I, like, again, I try to think of what my audience wants to hear. And then I also, and my audience and the people that I'm aiming towards are kind of like me. Cause if they weren't, I mean, you know, it wouldn't be as genuine. So sure. Then I look at, this is kind of how I do it. I look at what books I'm reading. I'm like, okay, here's the author. Let's just try to contact them. And you'll be surprised how easy it is to contact a lot of these guys. And,
right.
And then, you know, if you're genuine and honest, you're like, hey, this is what I'm doing. You know, it's no pressure. All I can offer you is maybe a plug for your book or whatever. And, you know, it might give me a signal boost and I think we'd have a great conversation. And most people are really receptive to it.
Got it. That's cool. I have heard that like a lot of times people are just like, they're like, oh no, so-and-so would never talk to me. And so they don't even ask.
Yeah.
And oftentimes these people do want to help out people. I think the guy you had on specifically mentioned that he likes trying to go on, you know, less known podcasts to give them a boost. So it's cool that people do that.
Sure. And you have to have a little bit of professionalism there too, like a good website, a place where they can see that, you know, you're working this. This is a project that you know, you have some skin in, because I mean, anyone sure. could call and be like, hey, I'm Joe Schmo and you know, I'm starting a podcast and man, so it kind of goes back to a theme that we bring up a lot on the show is that technology allows people like you and I to have an audience and to start really a global conversation.
Yeah.
But in the same, you know, it's a double-edged sword because that means everyone can do that. And there is a lot of shit out there.
So much. It's crazy. And, I mean, there's a lot of great stuff too.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
But almost too much great stuff where I feel like I can't keep up with all the shows on Netflix and new people
yeah.
that are worth, you know, your time, but you got to prioritize.
And that's why you got to look at it is, you know, I'm not out to conquer the world. I'm not out to be Joe Rogan. I, you know, what would I be doing now if I wasn't doing a podcast? My kids are asleep. I'm tired because it's after work. I'm probably just sitting on the couch watching Netflix or something. right. So I kind of just lost my train of thought there because I was looking at something else. But point of it is it gives me an outlet or gives me something to do. And now I remember what I was saying. It was about the, you know, I'm not trying to conquer the world. I'm just trying to, you know, if I can reach, you know, a few thousand people here and there, that's fine. Because it's kind of a cool, it opens up that conversation. And I get to meet people like you or I get to meet people like Dr. Chris Ryan and sure. You kind of keep those contacts. I have people I interviewed really early in my show that we still chat every now and then, and I invite them back on, and we have we kind of, you know, you build up sort of a what do you call that, like a interconnected web of folks that are like minded, and it's, I don't know, it's a really cool thing. I'm really like lucky, or we're really lucky to be around during this time for two reasons. One, the technology's here, and damn it, do we live in a freaking crazy time to be alive. There's never a lack of topics or things to talk about, which
yes.
leads into my next question. Sure. Politics is a dangerous area, Gray Windsor. What made you decide to go into, all right, we already talked about that, but were you worried, I guess, delving into that area? Because nowadays, man, you can get a scarlet letter put on you just for, you know, I mean, it's hard to even say. It's hard to even know when you're offending someone or when you're offending a group.
And if they decide that you have crossed that line, they set out to destroy you either by calling you a Nazi or by, you know, so yeah, tell me about do you have any concerns about that or?
So big question. I have concerns not related to myself specifically, and to kind of answer your question more about like why I started doing politics. Like I have always been fascinated with politics. I guess it was natural for me to do this, even though it wasn't like a vision of me to have a YouTube political channel. As far as myself, like, I remember one of the things you mentioned when you reached out to me was that you appreciated that, like, I put my name on my channel, but with all of this political stuff. And if you see the titles on my videos, I like to be a little bit provocative. Mm-hmm. But I guess, I don't know if it's like courage or foolishness. I feel like it could be equal parts both that I'm willing to attach my name to my views. Truthfully, like a lot of the stuff I talk about, even like with the Trump video that went viral, mm-hmm. yeah, I did have a lot of trolls. You know, there's 800,000 people that saw that video, and this is the internet, so there are going to be trolls. But really, the vast majority of comments were supportive. Mm-hmm. And the trolls, one thing I really appreciated was that I got hate from both sides, you know? So I would either be yelled at for being too liberal or too conservative. Mm-hmm. And to me, that was an indication that I was at least somewhere in the objective realm of people didn't know what I was. They just wanted to be angry.
That's actually a good place to be, I think, you know, for what your motives seem to be on the channel.
Yeah. So, I mean, you're absolutely right that there is this, you know, like the PC culture and social justice warriors and these, I don't know, mobs, I guess, for lack of a better word, that if you say something that's deemed offensive, that they come at you. And maybe it's just that I'm not big enough yet to have truly experienced that.
Right.
Recently, I think you listened to Joe Rogan. Did you hear about what happened with Colin Moriarty?
No.
So he is a huge YouTuber. He used to be in games media, and he's someone that I have been idolized him for years, been listening to him for years. I got to meet him a couple times, and just a really nice.
Oh, wait, is this PewDiePie?
No.
Oh, okay.
Than that, but very similar instance. Kind of similar instance.
Okay.
On National Women's Day, he tweeted, peace and quiet, hashtag a day without a woman. And I understand, you know, for people to make the case that, you know, it was maybe a bad timing for that joke, or it was in poor taste, or maybe just that it wasn't that funny because it's the same joke that every sitcom ever has basically made. Mm-hmm. But the outrage that followed the tweet was so extraordinary, and not just from people on Twitter, but from other people in games media, and it brought such negativity to the company, to his company, Kind of Funny, and he ended up resigning.
Wow.
Just because he didn't want to detract from his founders who were there. Everyone was there at the company. It was just five guys, just to be positivity. They call all their audience best friends. They're the best friends. Mm-hmm. And he felt like he was detracting from that because of all this negative attention and press and outrage he got over, you know, a 140 character tweet.
Yeah. And it's a joke, you know, it's not, I mean, it's a joke.
Yeah. It's a joke. And truly, I don't believe that anyone was that offended by that joke. I think people just want so badly to be offended and to take someone else down a notch that maybe they just disagree with politically, because he is outspoken. He's very strong libertarian views, which is extremely rare, mm-hmm. In the gaming sphere. So he's attracted attention for that before. which he contends, I don't know if this is true, that that's part of the reason that the media was so willing to go after him, just because they already were predisposed to, you know, taking a notch out of him. But even like, it's even worse than just that instance, right? Because then you have other instances like with Milo and with Richard Spencer, where it's not just people shouting on the internet and on and news outlets. It's people acting physically with violence.
Sure, burning cars and
speaking. Sorry.
No, yeah, I was just saying, sure, burning cars and you know, destroying campuses and stuff.
Yeah, and beating people up, not just Richard Spencer, but at the Milo rally, just mm-hmm. beating people. And then you see like celebrities come out endorsing that and saying it's like part of the resistance. And it's very disconcerting that we live in a time where there's even some sect of our population that supports that kind of thing.
Sure. Even groups like the Antifa, where it's anti-fascist, apparently there's a disconnect between that group and the idea that silencing the opposition through violence is a fascist thing to do.
I'm I would contend that a lot of the people who use the term fascist, if you ask them to define fascism, wouldn't necessarily be able to do that. I may be wrong, but that's my view.
Right. Right. I mean, at the Oscars, punch a Nazi, and then it comes down, who's the Nazis, right? So everyone can be, you know, whoever it is that you punch in the face, well, they were a Nazi. Did you see the girl that had the make Bitcoin great again? She had a, it was a goof hat.
No, I don't think I did. Was this at the Milo rally? Maybe I did. She like got beat up because they thought it was a Trump hat.
Yeah, and she got punched in the face, and I think, or she got maced or something like that.
Yeah.
But where, like... Where is that in public discourse? Like I don't understand to, you know, if you disagree with what someone has to say so much that let's shut them up, you know, permanently. It makes no sense. It's almost like a willful ignorance to civics.
Yeah. Have you heard of the Stanford prison study? Very famous.
Is this the one where they split up two people or two groups? One was the prison guards, the other one were the prisoners.
Yeah, exactly. It was mm-hmm. that one. It was mostly students, conducted by Phillip Zimbardo. It was a 6-day experiment. It's supposed to be 2 weeks, but it's cut short. They threw these two groups, and these people were vetted. They were totally normal people like you and I. Threw them into this fake prison at the school. One were the guards, one were the prisoners. And what happened is once these people had these roles assigned to them, it took a very short time for them to start embracing the roles. And over the 6 days, the guards became increasingly sadistic, making the people, the prisoners, defecate into buckets, wouldn't let them clean the buckets, like physical punishment. People, the prisoners had... Every day, at least one had a mental breakdown and had to leave the study. Wow. The point of what I'm trying to make here is one of the things the experimenters did to reinforce their new identities was they gave the prisoners numbers. So the prisoners didn't have names anymore. They were just numbers. And that made it easier for the guards to then treat them as less than human. And it's the same kind of thing that happens when you start throwing around these terms like Nazi and racist and whatever, bigot, without having like a real sense of what it means to call someone that. And it dehumanizes them. So it makes it easier for you to do the kind of things that we're seeing, to be violent to someone, to silence them. Cause in your mind, they're not human, you know, they're just like a Nazi.
Right.
And what's wrong with being a Nazi?
And then if you apply that to you know, let's just say legislation. Let's say someone wants to, let's say someone's idea is if we limit welfare, if we start limiting welfare, cutting back, it almost
puts the onus on the individual to start looking for work and to start almost as a motivator to not make poverty comfortable. And then someone can turn around and say, well, most of the people that are on, you know, welfare are Black or Hispanic, so you're a racist. And it's like that's right. that's not how ideas come about. That's not how individuals who are on opposite sides of the political spectrum sit down and say, okay, well, you know, what is a good idea to do that? And unfortunately we're in that era now. I mean, with our politicians, even our quote unquote news, I don't even know what news is anymore. You know, I honestly don't know. I don't know where to even get a good sense of what's happening. I almost, after Trump got elected and every time you turn on the news, just it's complete and utter nonsense. Like it's unbelievable that I've decided to shrink my world down to just my local. I mean, I do a podcast, I guess, goes over the world, but I mean, just for things that I care about, my family, my friends, my neighborhood, my town, and then to some extent my state. And then I just try to keep it there. And cause there's almost no reason for me to start going beyond that because it just will drive you crazy. I said to my neighbor once, you know, with all the election, all this craziness going on, if I open up the door and I listen and I hear birds and wind, I'll be like, okay, good. We got a good day. If I open up the door and I hear jackboots coming down the street, then it's all right, let's get to work. Let's lock this door. And I guess that's how I have to look into the future in order to keep from going insane.
Yeah, it's funny. I think I have a little bit of that, I don't know, like the Joker mentality from The Dark Knight in my head, where I can look at the news, and I agree with you, but I can, like, in some sense, it's fascinating to me. And I think part of it is because this rise of new media, I think old media is, like, desperate to stay relevant and to have their voice. And it leads to things like was the Wall Street Journal, like taking a shot at PewDiePie, you know?
Yeah.
So I think that's part of what contributes to it. So it to me, it's like, it's interesting to see the way Trump interacts with the media and to look at that. And you're right. It is nonsense on both sides a lot of the time. But unfortunately, a lot of people still believe that nonsense.
Sure. A lot. a majority, I would think, I would seem to think.
Yeah.
They're also, and then I don't know if you've noticed this, and I'm starting to get a feeling, you know, through Twitter, through, you know, like webs or YouTube channels like yours and others that I go on there seems to be a group of individuals who obviously disagree on a political basis, almost like our grandparents used to. Meaning you had your classic liberal, your classic conservative. One was big government, one was small government, you know, and they just had their classic arguments there. And then when you look at today with the social justice warrior left versus the alt-right, and it seems like, you know, those idiots don't represent anything for me, for liberal or conservatives. I mean, they are a fringe that seem to be grabbing onto a majority and polarizing the nation down the line. So I would like to think that individuals like yourself, and I'm trying, like, I guess I could say to some extent, Ben Shapiro, he seems to be, I mean, he's a conservative and, he's a hardline conservative, but he's not alt-right. Some people might want to call him that, but he's not. I don't know. Are you familiar with him?
Yeah. I mean, I've seen some of his interviews. I could give you his bio, but
okay. Yeah. And he seems to me, he seems to give Trump an honest, review, or I don't know what I'm saying. He seems to criticize Trump honestly, you know, from a conservative standpoint.
Sure.
And when I read it, I'm like, hey, okay, a lot of his criticism actually makes sense, and it kind of gives a little bit of clarity. But it's hard to find those people that are in. And I don't even want to call it in the middle because it's not really in the middle. It's it's more of a, like I said, I guess a classical liberal versus a classical conservative.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know. I mean, I don't know where this is going. You know, through social media. You know, in 10 years, we can't predict
what social media is going to be. Heck, we can't predict what it's going to be in 5 years. Just because the exponential growth of technology, there's no way to say where people are going to be transmitting information. You can kind of get some ideas, but one thing I was thinking about today was the iPhone. The first iPhone came out was about 10 years ago.
I don't remember. Sounds
it was right. About yeah, it was about 10 years ago. We went from you know, I don't know if you ever had it, but it was crappy. I mean, it was like an iPod that you could make phone calls with. To sure. Being able to take that little piece of plastic outside, turn it on, and broadcast to the entire world in 10 years. I mean, that's an amazing jump.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Even just the internet, that's not, you know, 20, 30 years ago mm-hmm. that really started to become a thing. That's not even just in the grand scheme of humanity, but even just on a shorter scale, that's a massive shift in recent history.
Right. And we can see what it did over the last 30 years. We can see what it did to our social spheres, our political spheres. Where are we going to be in 5 years? It's hard to say. And judging by where things are now, I don't even know what to think. I don't know. Do you have any thoughts? Do you have any thoughts where things are going? Will people start, I guess, and when you say new media, you're talking about, you know, the folks who tweet information and through methods like that, or what do you mean?
Twitter to an extent. I'm thinking more about like some of the like people like the Young Turks and the Rubin Report, which are, you know, real networks, but they exist on
okay.
our platform. The Rubin Report specifically is, I don't know if you're familiar with him. If not, you should.
Yeah, he's great. He's I think he's a very well-spoken and clear-minded guy, and I respect Ruben.
Absolutely. He had a great video on titled Why I Left the Left. Mm-hmm. Someone who used to be a liberal, or used to call himself a liberal, but now that that term has kind of been co-opted to mean something than what it used to mean, he can't support those policies or those ideas anymore. But the rise of people like him, and to go back to like Colin Moriarty, the guy I mentioned, he was forced to resign, essentially. A week later, he launched his own Patreon, and he received over $30,000. I think it went up to $37,000 per month just for him. And a lot of that was just like people so badly wanting to support him and who saw what happened to him as being wrong. So I'm cautiously optimistic. I think voices like Collins and Rubens and, you know, everyone else, even, you know, Joe Rogan and all of these people, who aren't afraid to talk about hard things or to offend people. I feel like, and maybe this is just hope, I feel like those voices are growing. There's definitely pushback to, you know, political correctness. I think Trump in some sense is a big symptom of that. Nothing else.
Oh yeah. I think, you know, when you look at Trump and you ask the people who voted for Trump and they call him racist and all that, I don't think it has anything to do with that. I think it was very much a protest vote, and that's, mm-hmm. I mean, I'm not a political analyst. I'm in medicine, so most of my days are spent sure. either raising my two small children or, you know, fixing broken legs and stuff. I mean, but my thoughts are enough people. I mean, what did we have? 17 people on the right that ran it first, and then God, you had Bernie and Hillary running on the left, and enough people looked at that and they're like, what is this? How are we supposed to vote for any of these people? And Trump comes in and he just starts talking like an idiot. And people were saying to themselves, you know, it's better than, I guess it's better than the typical political crap where I feel like that we're being, you know, like Animal Farm, people are using, or we're being herded together and we're saying, don't worry about what's going on. You listen to me, I'm in charge. And most people are like, no, we're adults and I'm not going to be lulled into this weird political thing that you want to have. And I'm not going to vote party lines. And I don't think, I mean, I know he ran as a conservative, but man, that was definitely not a party line that he won there. I mean, you can see it in the fracturing of the Republican Party right now.
You'd mentioned me attaching my name to things and talking about politics. I did. I mentioned to you that I for the most part, my videos were titled in ways that could be considered pro-Trump, like why he's going to be president or right. why he'll win on election day. And because those videos went big, I attracted a lot of pro-Trump followers.
Okay.
And then when I posted a video that titled "Why Donald Trump is Dangerous," I immediately lost so many people. And it was interesting reading the comments. There was a number of comments from people who said, "I unsubscribed and disliked this video, and then I watched it and I resubscribed." But the number of people who just flat out refused to hear it. So I guess my point with that is that there is what you were kind of touching on of not even being able to discuss ideas without being considered a racist. There is a similar thing with people on the right, where if they think you're one of those, you know, political correctness people who just hates everything that you stand for, they just won't listen to you, no matter if you're saying something honest or true or objective or whatever.
Which is totally bizarre, because you should want to hear what the other half has to say, even within your own party. It's how ideas, I mean, it's how we come up with, I mean, it's how ideas are born. It's how legislation is born. But yeah, people
that
don't.
That might be, honestly, the scariest part of you know, political correctness and all this stuff to me, is just the way ideas are silenced and seeing people. I don't know if you know, if you're familiar with Sam Harris, but
oh yeah,
he, like, brilliant person. I don't think anyone who knows him or has read him would question, you know, how smart he is. And then if he said he's, you know, said things about Islam, that it needs reforms, and he just gets torn apart.
Oh, sure.
And, you know, considered a racist and anti-Islam and all of these things, when, in my opinion, he's trying to help everyone.
Sure.
So it's really scary.
When you listen to him, when you listen to what he had to say on, I think it was, what's his name there, in the Bill Maher. He said on Bill Maher. And I don't remember his exact quote, but he had mentioned, actually, let's see if I can pull it up here. I mean, what he said was reasonable. And even if it was disagreeable, he has the right to say it. And there's right. no reason, you know, if you don't like what someone has to say, you disagree and you come up with your counter argument, or, you know, how you feel, and then you hash it out. Yep. But
people go straight to name calling. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And it's almost like, when I see a lot of these things happen, it reminds me of like kindergarten with like these almost straw men arguments. So one child says to another child, let's say your teacher's name is Mrs. Smith. So do you love Mrs. Smith? Yeah, I guess I love Mrs. Smith. Joey wants to marry Mrs. Smith, you know, and they start going crazy with that. It's like, well, right. No, he didn't say that, but kindergartners do that. It's what they do. And it goes back to, I guess, the example of, do you believe in increasing welfare? Well, no, I think it's, you know, I think right now we can't afford it, and you're racist. It's like, well, no, I'm not racist. There's a reason behind my thoughts, and there's a reason, you know, behind what I think. Why don't you stop and listen, and then, you know, we can discuss this. But people just don't want to do that.
Yeah, it's people just like want to live in their, you know, their own bubble. And never have their thoughts challenged, it seems. And you have things like safe spaces and trigger warnings, and, you know, college professors who have to warn people before they're going to talk about something historical, you know? I don't feel like if you're going to talk about, you know, Nazi Germany, by the way, if the audio is picking that up, there's a whole lot of screaming going on. I promise I'm not murdering anyone.
Yeah, I was listening to that. I thought either you had a bird or there's something really weird going on right now.
I think it's just like four girls partying next door. I live in Manhattan, so there's always a lot of crazy noises.
Wow.
That one definitely distracted me. But yeah, people just want to live in their bubble and not hear what anyone else has to say. And that's not the way, we're so divided right now. It's not going to help anything if you just refuse to listen. And in a democracy that thrives on new ideas and progressing, you know, like when Martin Luther King, the FBI considered Martin Luther King a radical, mm-hmm. you know, and
by today's standards, it's like, yeah,
well,
you know,
what was that?
I say by today's standard, what he said, it's kind of just like, yeah, well, it's exactly, he was exactly right. But in those days, you're right. He was radical.
Right. And if we're willing to silence people because their ideas seem extreme, like, would we have had someone like Martin Luther King, or will we have the next Martin Luther King?
Yeah. And that's why I was getting back to, I'm surprised that you're able to put you put more than your name, you put your face on there. And all it does is pissing off the wrong crowd. And I mean, you're how old are you?
20. I'm 20.
Okay. So you're 20. And you are at the generation and at the cusp of basically your career. And it's not going anywhere. Like everything you put out on the internet, it's not going anywhere. And people will be able to find out what you say and what you thought. And regardless of what you say and what you thought, everything can be taken out of context. It takes saying the wrong thing around or someone perceives as the wrong thing, or maybe someone just doesn't even like you, which happens, you know. Mm-hmm. People listen to your show and they just say, I don't like this guy for whatever reason.
They don't like ginger. Or something.
That could be. You know what? I have a fondness for gingers. My son is a redhead. So,
oh, good. We're a dying breed. So
that's right. You know, you would say that, but the weird thing is, and I think maybe it's because I have a redhead son now. I feel like I see them everywhere.
Oh, really?
Yeah. My thought is that you guys are taking over.
I mean that's my goal. I can only marry a redheaded girl, you know.
Yeah, and just propagate now see what you're saying there is very, so you did a couple things. You cisgendered yourself, okay? You said redhead, so automatically that makes you racist. And but you see how, I mean, it's that silly.
I feel like it's because I'm a part of that group, though. I can say whatever. I can say gingers have no souls and all that, and they're the offspring of the devil. I'm part of that group. I think that gives me license. I think those are the rules. I could be wrong.
I guess so.
one thing, totally random thing that I just like to talk about. Do you know the Overton window? I mentioned it in my video. It has to do with political correctness.
And okay.
It's just a recent idea that basically at any given period in time, you know, there's an array of topics that people, that it's okay to talk about, mm-hmm. you know? So 30 years ago, gay marriage was not necessarily in that array of topics. It was kind of taboo. Oh, you support gay marriage. Whereas now, obviously it's legal in every state.
Sure.
Thanks to the Supreme Court. And what we've been saying is the way political correctness constrains that window, right? So mm-hmm. it shrinks the ideas that you can talk about. And again, it just makes it for things like gay marriage and whatever next, you know, civil rights issue is there. It makes it harder to talk about.
Sure. Absolutely. And to me, it makes no sense, especially when you're talking about it. So if you force racists and, you know, bigots and misogynists, if you force them into the shadows, now you don't know who they are because they can't speak freely.
Right. One thing I love that Bill Murray says is to like shine the light on people. That's how you silence them, not by trying to hide them away. It just makes them more powerful.
Sure. And I don't agree with a lot of what Bill Maher says, but man, I think he's got a great show, and I think he's important. I think mm-hmm. that I guess laissez-faire attitude towards I don't care what people think about me. This is what I say. There's really no reason to get angry at what he says. You may disagree, but the fact that he's got the balls to go out there and say it, or even people like what's his name, Steven Crowder, even people like him, you know, who have the balls to actually go out. And I mean, I think he did a Bob Ross, you know who that was, back in the olden days. Yeah, he was a painter, and he did Bob Ross, but he drew Muhammad on one of his. one of his channels. Yeah, I mean, the balls that takes. And the fact that the fact that we live in an age where that's not only, I guess, dangerous professionally, but that's dangerous physically. It's physically dangerous to do that is crazy.
It is crazy.
Who do you
think anything more you could say to that?
Who do you think, Big Brother is today?
Who do I think Big Brother is today?
Yeah, because if you, and I don't know if you ever read 1984, if you haven't, it's a requisite for someone in your position, but so in the day, Big Brother was the all-powerful government, and he was an idea. He wasn't necessarily a person, and the idea was, as with a lot of Orwell's stories, you know, controlling groups through controlling their information, and I guess keeping control of power through that method, using violence, using hunger, and then when the people decide to rebel, or when they have a rebellious attitude, you redirect them. I don't want to say subconsciously, but yeah, I guess subconsciously through the way you speak and the way you communicate ideas to them. So, sure. So nowadays, I mean, we have, and we I guess you could see it with the PC culture, probably the 90s when this really started kicking in. We have a Big Brother, but it seems to be not centralized. There's no centralization as to who is watching you. It's almost like a self-regulated censorship. I mean, let's say in this day and age, and let's say things get worse, and you know, if you drop an N-bomb, which another thing too, right? I'm not a racist, but I could never use that word. There's no way I could use that word. It's a word. You know what I mean? It's a word, but there's no way in hell I'm ever going to say that, at least on my, and even if it's not said in context, if I'm just saying it like right now to describe what I'm, you know, what I'm talking about, you just can't do it. So if the people decide to turn and rebel against that censorship, where do you go? Who, it's not the government. In 1984, it was smashing the big TV screen with a hammer or whatever. But nowadays, it's almost embedded. It's almost becoming like the DNA of our society. And the only way to, I guess, break through that honestly, I don't know how you would. I don't know how you break through it. I guess it would come with how you raise your children. I remember when I was a kid and they started saying chairwoman and policewoman. And I was like, man, that sounds weird, because it was always policemen. I was a kid; I didn't know any different. Mm-hmm. And then it slowly, you know, you heard more and more people say it. Now people say it all the time. It's part of our language. I even say it because it doesn't. It's just how we talk. And it's not like I'm going to turn to my children and say, you know, if you say policeman, it doesn't include everybody who could be a police officer. So I want you to concentrate. I mean, it's just going to be, they're not going to think about it. It's just going to be their natural way of talking. Is it a good thing? I mean, theoretically, yeah, I guess the idea of being more inclusive is a good thing, but to be forced into an idea to be exclusive, I mean, to be more inclusive based on language it doesn't sit right. It's totally 1984.
Yeah, you painted a very depressing picture there.
I know, I go on rants like that, and then I have to drink whiskey to go to bed.
Okay, got it. I have a bottle of wine next.
There you go.
That'll be my good thing. I'll try and be a bit positive here, though.
Okay.
You're definitely right. Like, in the sense that this censorship is really coming from us, and it's not all of us. I don't think it's the majority of us. I think it's just an extremely vocal subsect of us, mm-hmm. minority. But it becomes this unwritten rule where these people are so loud that, you know, a company has to tiptoe around things because they see these reactions. And it doesn't matter that it's whatever percentage of people, it's 5% of people that are actually truly, you know, offended. They don't want the media that surrounds that, and they can't afford the media that surrounds that. And in that sense, it is like scary, whereas, you know, with 1984, like you mentioned, and I haven't read it, so it is on my shelf. I need desperately to read it.
Yeah, that's actually, you should just stop this podcast and go read it right now.
And go read it. But where you can physically break a TV, and that's your way of fighting back. And it's a little bit more nebulous here, where, like, who are you fighting, us, you know, kind of thing?
Mm-hmm.
And I think what it comes down to, what I mentioned before, is the rise of voices like Rubin and Joe Rogan and Colin Moriarty. There's tons of these people. Or even PewDiePie, who is not a political commentator, mm-hmm. but when it happened to him, he spoke out against it. And I think... this is an explicit podcast, right?
Oh, yeah, you can say whatever you want.
Okay. There's a quote by, the famous comedian. He wrote The Office, the British one.
because you said that, no. It's, here we go.
The Office, we're both Googling. This is Ricky Gervais.
Thank you. Whew.
he made this, like, really, like, kind of brilliant tweet that just kind of said, it's really cute seeing this PC culture and expecting us to give a fuck kind of thing. And I think the more people just start saying no, like, you don't even have to speak out against it, but just start saying no. And, like, I'm not going to play that game, and I'm going to say what I want. And, you know, if you're offended, I'm sorry. Like, you know, I'm not trying to offend people, but this is how I feel. And these are my thoughts. And I think the more voices like Rubin and Moriarty rise and their followers grow, the more people you'll have that will stop caring about PC culture and all of these things. I mean, I think that's part of the reason that, in my opinion, they've gotten louder and, you know, you've seen the violent riots, is that I think they feel like they're losing to an extent. And maybe this is partially because of Trump.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like in the future, it may get more exaggerated, and there may be more, you know, riots, and there may be more people speaking out against PC. But in the long run, I feel like it is a battle of ideas that is being lost by the people who support, you know, free speech, the people who support PC. One thing that's interesting about the technology is, like, the more we depend on things like Twitter and Facebook to communicate, Twitter banned Milo from speaking on there. And at the end of the day, they're a private company. I don't know what your political leanings are, but it's hard for me to swallow the idea of the government telling a private company how to run themselves. It's interesting where you can truly hurt someone's voice. I mean, I guess with Milo, he's still plenty popular, but by silencing them on these platforms, and the more prevalent they become, or new ones that come up that are even stronger, I guess the word is, or better at getting your word out than Twitter.
Mm-hmm.
It's just kind of an interesting concept, a company kind of being able to regulate what you can and cannot say.
I know it's bizarre, and I don't see a way to prevent that, as long as someone is providing, you know, the access, unless there was some sort of, and as a libertarian, this is like nothing a libertarian should say, but unless there's some sort of regulation or legislation that says, you know, hey, I mean, we do have that one little bit of legislation called the First Amendment, but, and you say, you know, you can't, if you're going to allow someone onto your platform, you can't silence them through. But I mean, that doesn't make sense though, because if someone comes into my restaurant and starts reading Mein Kampf, you know, I would want to kick them out.
Because, yeah, exactly. When I see trolls in my comments that are adding no value whatsoever, I don't feel the need to have them there.
Right. Exactly. So I don't know, man. That's a weird area. I don't know. Unless,
yeah. So, I think the argument that, like, a objectivist or a libertarian would say is that if there is a platform that starts silencing people, you know, a new platform would arise for all the people who are silenced, and ultimately the market would determine who's right. So I guess that would be my hope, but it's still just weird.
Yeah. And I mean, you see a lot of that too with this whole, like, people who won't bake cakes for gay weddings and stuff. And I mean, right there is the perfect example. You've got people cheering for the banning of Milo, and then some idiot doesn't want to bake a cake for someone else and they want to destroy their business. And, you know, right. if someone has views like that, it's none of my business. I mean, it isn't. And, you know, being a libertarian, I could care less who marries who. It's not my business. It's not the governance business. It's nobody's business, but the person that's getting married. And if I, in my town, heard that someone, you know, refused to decorate for a wedding because they were against it, I just would be like, all right, well, that guy's an asshole and I'm not going to go to his store. Right. And that's how it should work. Right. I mean, that's how the free market works, but
you vote with your dollar by not spending it.
Exactly.
And it's business. The one thing, a lot of times when I read politics all the time, and for the most part, I can kind of detach myself from it and not get like angry or anything like that. But when I see like just like blatant hypocrisy, mm-hmm. That's really something that gets me. Like this whole thing, you know, Trump being investigated by the FBI, yeah. and it's the same scenario with Hillary Clinton, except the sides have now flipped. Where before the Republicans were like, lock her up, and the Democrats were like, oh, you know, no big deal. And now it's the Democrats who are like, he needs to be impeached, and the Republicans who are like, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
And this I don't understand how people don't see the like contradiction within themselves, that clearly they did not have a principled value. They just had a bias, and they used this investigation to malign whatever party they didn't like.
There is a bit of mass delusion, I think, that's going on. It's something sociological that I wonder if people are studying it right now. Because you can go to some sites, some blogs. A fun one to go to is Everyday Feminism. And you read some of the ideas that these people have. And it's like, and the support some of these ideas get. And you're like, what planet are you living on? Like, as a reasonable person, which, like I said, I hope a lot of us are, you can look into some of the stuff and say, there's no way anybody supports this. And then you go into Twitter and you look and people are supporting it left and right. And you're like, and then you try to converse with them. You know, you'll say, hey, do you think that this might be a little crazy, or that this might be a little hypocritical? Or do you think, and the first thing they go with is, well, you must be a Trump supporter, racist jerk, blah, 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 blah. You're dumb. It's like, no, I have a graduate degree. I don't say that to them, but it's like, they don't know who they're talking to. And it's just, I want to find out if people actually, and I think they do. I think they really believe some of this stuff.
There's a great quote by Mark Twain, and it's just, whenever you are on the side of the majority, it's time to pause and reflect. And people, and maybe majority isn't the right word in this context, but people find their echo chamber, you know, and they mm-hmm. never stop to think whether or not their echo chamber is right. And one of the most egregious things, this is me just kind of getting on a soapbox here for a mm-hmm. moment, but that I saw, I think her name is Linda Sarsfjord. She's the leader of the women's movement. And there's this other politician from somewhere in the Netherlands, I believe, Ayaan Hirsi Ali, who was a victim of female genital mutilation when she was a child. Mm-hmm. And now she speaks out against it. And she also speaks in favor of reform for Islam. And this leader of the women's movement tweeted about this Ayaan Hirsi Ali that she would take away her vagina and that she doesn't deserve any of these things. And this is like a woman who literally suffered from female genital mutilation being attacked by someone who supports women's equality in wow. theory.
Wow.
Yeah, exactly. Disgusting. And I look at this as a glass half full thing, in that I think because of the tendency of this PC like mob to eat its own, and the second someone says something, even if they were originally in the group, that is now wrong, to just extricate them, get rid of them, toss them to the side, treat them like garbage. I think at the end, they just hurt themselves and are going to collapse in on themselves, maybe just by, you know, getting rid of their own.
Sure. That would be ideal, I think.
Yeah. I haven't decided how to treat trolls yet. I've just been kind of like cute with them or not. I don't want them to give any indication that they've gotten a rise out of me, because they haven't. A lot of the time I just think it's funny. There are some great troll comments, by the way, specifically in regards to me being a ginger. one ginger genocide joke. But for some reason, that stuff doesn't bother me. Don't know why.
You can't let, especially if you want to get in this field. Man, you got a lot of good ideas, especially at your age. Man, I think you're only going to go up from here. My advice would be keep your viewers guessing, you know. Some of the best, and you know, who knows, you know, if this lands you in a new media role or something like that, that'd be a great thing for you. But keep people guessing, meaning, you know, be honest, but, you know, don't wear your politics on your sleeve. And I think you're doing a good job with that now. As you see, if you do a pro Trump or if you criticize Trump, you get hate from everybody. And that's actually, right. You're right. That's a good thing. And I think, just keep that up.
Thank you. And I appreciate you having me on. It was a lot of fun.
No problem. I have a list of things I want to talk about. We maybe hit two or three of them. So, if you ever want to come on again, especially after you blow up, man, don't forget us little guys.
For sure.
Can
make a few more viral videos. I'll come back.
So, sure. just to recap for the listeners, where can they follow you on Twitter?
Gray Winsler, GrayWinsler.
And then
my name and face everywhere.
Okay. So. And then to find your infamous video and then to link to other videos and that, just put in Gray Winsler Trump or just Winsler Trump?
Yeah, if you just do Gray Trump, you'll be fine. Or Why Donald Trump Will Be President, I'll probably come up.
When's your next video out?
Friday. Friday's at 6 p.m.
All right, man. Thanks again.
Yeah, great talk.
All right, good luck. All right, bye.
Like us on facebook.com/WWIPodcast and at WWIPodcast on Twitter. Drop us a line at waitswhatifpodcast@yahoo.com. Listen to us on iTunes, Stitcher, or TuneIn Internet Radio. Enjoyed your listening experience. Now go forth and expand your reality.